Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Before we get this Bulls Talk podcast underway officially, Casey Johnson, Rob Schaefer, Tony Gill, I am merely Jason Goff. Rob, welcome back from vacation.
Hey.
Thank you. Where'd you go? How'd it feel? And how does it feel to be back?
Yeah. So as I mentioned on the pod a few weeks ago, I'm back east, staying at my childhood home for a couple weeks, working remotely and like getting around to see family and stuff like that that I haven't seen in a couple years. So I have family up in Maine, went up, stayed with them for a couple days, did some hiking in Acadia, which was cool. Got around Maine. It's a charming place. and I love hiking in nature stuff. I'll post pictures somewhere at some point. I still got to go through them. But it was cool to get away. I was telling Casey on the phone the other day, I was like, Maine's great. You know, the beaches are great. I surfed for the first time, which was fun. Nothing serious, but that was kind of, I'm not a big snowboarder or skier or any of those like, quote unquote extreme sports like that. So that was a cool thing. So yeah, they have like beaches, they've got nature, they've got some nice little towns, like Portland's a nice place. And the service was terrible for 8 or 9 straight days, which is exactly, what you wanted.
Yeah.
I was bummed. It's good to be back. I feel very recharged and refreshed, which is great. Motivated, less burnt out, which of course, you know, happens when you accumulate, over a couple months of a season. And then, you know, the Bulls weren't in the playoffs, but the playoffs and the off season is obviously still a ton of work. So it was all great. My one regret is that I missed the week where we had 15 minutes where it looked like Paul Millsap might be a Bull. So, I listened to all that stuff retroactively. But yeah, that was my one regret is that I missed being able to speculate about that for a few minutes. Cause that was my guy that I was really hoping the Bulls would get. But you know, as we'll talk about today, they're filling it out in other ways. And, they'll just have to figure out that front court in another way, but good to be back. The other thing it's a reminder of is like, you know, you come back, and I know some people come back from vacation and they're so dreading like coming back to work. But for me, like, I love my job. I love talking to you guys. I love getting deep in the Bulls weeds. So it didn't feel like I was coming back to, you know, hell. Like, it was just nice to get that recharge.
Hey, that's the NBC Sports Chicago slogan, I think, this year. Better than hell, apparently. So.
Yeah.
Looking out. Glad you're back to a place that's better than hell. We miss you. We miss you, and people miss you as well. Casey, he just mentioned it, filling out the roster, right? 13 guaranteed contracts, I believe, if I read the piece correctly, that dropped a day ago on NBCSportsChicago.com by our very own Rob Schaefer, where Bulls depth chart stands after roster overhaul. So we know some of the guys, but we also know what the training camp crew is going to look like. I'm sure there'll be some guys to get jumped on there. But how do we feel? Because we were talking about power forward depth. We were talking about wing depth. They got a lot of wings. Got a lot of wings. Got a lot of guards who are going to require some time. I like Matt Thomas. I liked him every time I saw him. Like that. You know, everybody's got a dude who is like, hey, man, this guy can really play, and I don't think anybody knows it, but I'm going to hold on to him until he flames out and then never mention him again. Like, I'm a big Mike James guy, right? I saw Mike James play a few times live. And I'm like, I love that dude. And then the Brooklyn game against the Bulls last year, I'm like, oh, get your shit off, Mike. But Matt Thomas also is one of those dudes who I notice as a Toronto Raptor. Like, all right, every time he's on the floor, seems like some decent stuff happens, right? So – aside from Matt Thomas, what are we looking at, KC, as far as the roster is concerned? We got 16 guys we could talk about. 13 of them are guaranteed. Obviously, we've been talking about the star players. I think we can get in the weeds a little bit today.
Yeah, absolutely, because we've got the full roster, so we can finally break it down a little bit. It's funny because, you know, you look at what they did after Millsap chose the Nets, and everyone's, you know, going, whoa is the size, whoa is the rim protection, et cetera, et cetera. I'm in that chorus too, but it's funny. Millsap's not a big guy either, but obviously he is a pretty rugged interior defender and a strong rebounder, so he plays bigger than he is. But, you know, there's some hope that some of these guys that they sign can play bigger than they are. I mean, Stanley Johnson, he's on a non-guaranteed deal, but he's got, I believe, a 7-foot wingspan. So, you know, you can – what I like about this management group is you can tell that they have a number one plan, and when that doesn't work out, they move right to the number two plan, and they're just getting all these, you know, defensive-minded combo forwards that can play both small and four. I would say Alize is am I pronounced that right, finally, Rob?
Yeah, Alize Johnson.
Alize is probably your more traditional power forward, even though he is a little bit undersized. So he's probably, to me, the biggest lock to get that 14 spot, and then it's going to be some competition. I mean, you're right. If Matt Thomas comes in and shoots the heck out of the ball, you can never have enough shooting. And Stanley Johnson, you could argue, and this is playing the speculative game, is kind of duplication with some of the players they have in their roster, you know, guys like Derrick Jones Jr., a little bit of Troy Brown Jr., et cetera, who are on guaranteed deals. So the opportunity is going to be there for Matt Thomas. If I had to guess, Alize is probably the safest of the non-guaranteed guys for that 14 spot. And then this is what you want in camp. You want some competition. So I like what they've done to fill this out. I think we're all in agreement that Millsap, considering we spent like four podcasts on it, I think we're all agreed that Millsap would have been the perfect signing, but it was not to be, but they quickly moved on to round out the roster.
Rob, before we get to you and your thoughts, I am just appreciative of the fact that Casey Johnson had to say Alize three different times just now. and it reminds me of my prom night where you're supposed to go to prom and like sneak a drink, right? In the limo, we pulled up to the Walgreens and I gave a, I don't know, a sheltered challenge person. I don't want to call anybody homeless. I don't know what the politically correct term for homeless is, but I gave a guy 20 bucks and he went in there and he got me a bottle of Alize. So ladies and gentlemen, I am very pleased that our guy Casey Johnson had to say Alize Johnson three different times in this pod. So, Rob, if you'd like to throw three more on there or talk about the rest of the roster, you go right ahead, my man.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that Matt Thomas thing, Jason, because that really spoke to me. Like, I just feel like I've seen the five Matt Thomas games in his NBA career, and I went and looked at his numbers, just to see if it would line up. And like, he shot 47.5% from three his rookie year. But you know, camp guy, you know, these are all just kind of warm bodies for the time being, and then we'll see if any of them can stick. But I've always been kind of sneakily a fan of his too. He could just really shoot it, if nothing else.
On the defensive end, like, he may get beat, but he ain't gonna get punked. So I like Matt Thomas.
He's just that quintessential, like, you catch him on league pass, you know, when he, you know, and you just see those moments and it's like, all right, you form your opinion there.
He's Woody Harrelson from White Man Can't Jump.
Yeah. so he's a guy, but I think my attention is focused a little bit more on the front court guys, just because that's the area need on the roster. Casey, I agree. I think Alize Johnson is the most likely of the group to win a roster spot. He's the guy that I've done the most kind of like background work on to just kind of see what he looks like, how he might fit. You know, like you said, a little bit undersized, 6'7", pretty traditional four. I think he's a second round pick in 2018 of the Pacers. And he's a guy that, with guys like this, when they spend a lot of time in the G League, and he spent parts of his three NBA seasons in the G League, and then I think he has like 50 games of NBA experience, I like that he just puts up big stat lines in the G League games. Like, there's a level of him where, you know, maybe he's too good for that league, and maybe he's still finding his niche in the NBA. But the fact that in his three G League seasons, I have his averages here, he was 19-4-3 his first year, 19-14-3 his first year, 20-13-4 points, rebounds, assists his second year. And then last year for the Raptors, 9-0-5, he was average 16-13-4 roughly. Like, those are pretty gaudy numbers. He then signs with the Nets for the latter part of the 2020-21 season. Had a couple big games that I saw, you know, clips circulating of. You know, he had a 23-15 game, a 20-20 rebound game later on in the year. But I think he's just like a quintessential energy guy, not the most explosive vertical athlete, but a decent finisher because he's got this kind of crafty floater game, and just a rebound magnet. Like, all of his numbers are probably too small sample size to take too much away from. But in his whatever 18 game stint for the Nets last year, he was averaging 10 minutes a game. He was averaging 5 rebounds and 1.5 offensive rebounds per game. Like, when you translate that to per 36, you just get some pretty crazy figures, like a 26% rebound rate, 17 rebounds per 36 minutes. Like, I think that's his most surefire NBA skill. And that obviously would help the Bulls if he can carve out kind of a rotation level spot in the forward rotation. Sneaky decent passer too. When I was reading off those G League averages, he was at 4.3 assists per game in the G League last year. He averaged in the 3 assists per game range in college. He's kind of like, I think back in the day, he was more of a grab and go guy. Like, he is that kind of more of a 4-3 than a 4-5. So that fits kind of the versatile, multifaceted, like kind of skilled repertoire that it seems like this new Bulls regime, front office regime values. So I actually think he's a pretty good flyer for what this roster needs, kind of a reserve four rotation guy. There are some wing types that can fill in that slot, as we talked about with guys like, you know, Derek Jones Jr. and DeMar DeRozan can play some four. But I think Alize could really help them. As for the other guys, Stanley Johnson, obviously a former heralded draft pick, number 8th overall to the Pistons a number of years ago, hasn't really panned out, especially offensively. But, you know, good measurables, good athlete. Ethan Thompson, people will remember, those who watched Bulls Summer League basketball, especially towards the end, people will remember him. He was a 4-year college guy at Oregon State, averaged, I think, 8.6 points a game, shot 32% from 3 in Summer League. So he'll get a shot. Tyler Cook, a guy who started on a 10-day for the Pistons last year, gets a shot. Another one of those kind of combo forward types, the 6'9". Most of his offensive game is combined to the paint, but kind of one of the another energy dude who potentially in that forward rotation, you know, is going to be competing for a spot. And then Thomas, who we've hit on. So, yeah, there's a crop of guys here, you know, 4 or 5 that will be vying for those last 2 roster spots. I think Alize seems to have the most, you know, it's easier to immediately see how he's going to, or how he would translate to the NBA roster. But, you know, it'll be fun to watch how these guys look in camp, what people are saying about them. And then if they get some preseason action, that's always fun to break down too. I remember this time last year, or maybe a little bit later this time last year, you know, Bulls fans were in an uproar because Simi Shidu didn't, you know, get that last roster spot after he popped off in the last preseason game. And Simi Shidu is great, but it's you know, those kinds of moments, if any of these guys can have them, now that there are roster spots up for grabs, it can make it that much more fun to analyze. So I'm looking forward.
Along those lines, real quick, Rog, I'm calling BS on your G League comp, though. Let me read you some stats right now from a G League stint. 16.6 points, 9.6 rebounds, 2 assists. And that player is?
Ooh.
Cristiano Felicio.
Oh! So I'm not saying that automatically means you're going to be a great NBA player, but
no, that's exactly what it means, Rob. When you say it and lay it out the way you did, you just told the people out there, is Alize Johnson, right? I'm going to call him Al from here on out so I don't think about that horrible night back in 1998. But no, seriously, you have promised people that a burgeoning all-star has been signed by the Chicago Bulls to battle for that backup power forward spot. So
yeah. I'll wear it. He posted a GIF of Dennis Rodman when the signing got announced. So, you know, let's even go a step farther.
Now in Rob's defense, in Rob's defense.
How you go shit on Rob and then come to his defense?
Because I'm a balanced objective
reporter. Right.
So I don't believe Kevin Durant ever sang the praises of Cristiano Felicio. And there's a video circulating on social media of how much Kevin Durant loves him some Alize Johnson. So there you go.
I like it when Kevin Durant and I are in the same corner in terms of basketball evaluation. I like it when that happens.
I know what Jason's going to say. Kevin Durant like loves everybody in the Bulls, right?
Yeah, what's going on? This dude is out here tampering with the whole damn team, 1 through 15. So, nah, Kevin, we don't need your love out here. Stay your ass in Brooklyn until you come here. You know what I mean?
Until you sign here, right?
Right, exactly. Until he signs here, because Lord knows that'll be the Bulls would be like year 18 or year 19 Kevin Durant stop, you know what I mean, when he's D-Wading it or Dominique on the Celtics or something like that. Speaking of Kevin Durant liking people. Zach LaVine just seems to continue to pop up in all of these off-season workouts, looking like, you know, looking like an off-season workout king, because in those games, you know, minimal defense is being played and you're not fouling professionals because you want to keep guys healthy. But I'm enjoying seeing Zach LaVine do anything this summer, whether it's go to a lovely location with him and his beautiful fiance. They're still engaged, right? Or are they married yet? They're not. There hasn't been a marriage yet, right? So yeah.
I can't confirm or deny, but I suspect there will be a social media.
I don't want to call her his wife before that time. So
fiance, but, I think fiance.
Yeah, his beautiful fiance, you know, on Instagram where they're having great dinners together, or you know, seeing him hoop against Bradley Beal and Spencer Dinwiddie and a couple of these guys in these open runs. It's good to see. It's good to see Zach LaVine not just back in his element, but you know, working on his game. And obviously Instagram and all these other things, they just show you the highlights and they just show you what you know should be happening because it's a supercut. But
I saw a comment, Jason, on one of Chris Brickley's videos, another who's one of the best Instagram followers out there. I love following these accounts.
Yeah, I follow him because of you.
Yeah. I saw a comment on one of his videos that was like, I don't think I've ever seen anyone miss in this gym. it's a magic gymnasium.
But
a question for you guys, with the Zach stuff, like, I don't know whether there's anything to read into this, but it is kind of cool to see him among the class of guys that are usually in those offseason workouts. Like, you don't want to read too much into that stuff, but, I think there's something to that too. Like just another kind of marker, of his ascent, because I've been noticing that too, Jason. Like Zach, his work ethic, especially in off seasons, is well documented, and that's been kind of a permeating thing throughout his whole career. But him being in rooms with these guys and publicly so now, like, and he's, you know, a lot of times he's wearing that USA Basketball shirt, kind of a reminder there. Like, you know, hey, I don't have the gold medal around my neck right now, something. But that's in my trophy case. So those are all cool things for Zach and for the Bulls and for Bulls fans.
You know what's interesting to me? Like, I'm getting those vibes that he, and talking to somebody who was kind of close to that situation for Team USA, saying that Zach was told, hey, man, you're already here. You just got to get here. And getting here is the winning part, the playoff part, having those playoff moments. He's already at that level where his peers consider him what a lot of fans consider him to be, like, all right, this is the next dude. And all you got to do is get there, right? Like, you know the destination, you just got to follow the GPS. And it seems like he's following the professional GPS of, okay, took your lumps in one place, had your first severe injury, bounced back, still on a losing team, but ascending in terms of individual and personal growth. Now you've got a different coach, you got a different front office. They put things around you, whether it be another all-star or the point guard that you need. You got yourself a young pup that you can nurture in Patrick Williams and Kobe White. Like, all the things, all the steps that you're supposed to take, he's taking. You just got to have the winning. You just got to make sure that this team isn't fighting for the play-in game, right? Because anything above six, Zach LaVine is going to be heralded as, okay, he's here now. You know, the Bulls mess around and are fighting the Heat and the Celtics for playoff positioning. That's a lot different than messing with the Hornets and the Orlando Magic, right? So I feel like he knows that he's there, but he hadn't gotten there yet, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, his talent is completely at that level. And, you know, you see that obviously with the All-Star appearance and then the Olympic berth appearance. And just like you said, rubbing elbows with the class of player that he is. I think you guys always know. I mean, it's a players' league, and players always know, and the players know what kind of talent Zach LaVine is. So now, the next thing is, you know, he's got to take that step with team winning, and he knows that. I mean, can you imagine doing interviews late next season if they're fighting for a playing spot and they don't get it? You know how glum he's going to be. I mean, he was
pissed at the end of last season.
Yeah, he takes that as a personal like embarrassment almost. You know, I mean, he takes that deeply. You know, I'm with you. I think we've all been in agreement. They've got to be, to me, six and up. That to me cements not only, you know, Zach LaVine's ascension, but also the commitment that the front office has made to burn in draft capital to field this roster. So now they got to go out and do it. Everything is lining up right, but now they got to go out and do it and win games, obviously.
And look, this is ancillary to winning too, but say the Bulls are in that 6 and above range, 4 to 5, however high they would be able to climb in their ceiling outcome. What comes with that for the individual performers, and Zach is the best player on this team coming into the season. A lot of times individual accolades come with that. If Zach LaVine is an All-NBA player this year, there's a little monetary incentive that could come with that too in the form of that Supermax contract this offseason, obviously no extension. That's kind of an underlying thing from these Bulls offseason moves is that they chose, and I think it's a calculated decision. I'm sure it's one that they spoke with Zach about, the decision to improve the roster instead of immediately prioritizing that extension. The upside of that for Zach is, you know, not only, you know, unrestricted free agent, you're just, you just have more freedom or flexibility or whatever, but the door is open for if he is to get that All-NBA recognition. You know, he said he wants to get paid what he deserves, and that's that's another level up, even from the max deal that he could sign now. So, you know, obviously ancillary to winning, but there's another thing to monitor with his ascent through the NBA ranks.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I think I asked you guys a couple weeks ago, or like a few pods ago, maybe 4 or 5 ago, the thing that people aren't talking about enough. Well, I want you guys to dig inside your reporter minds and maybe not talking about too much, but what do you think is overstated going into training camp in terms of worries or topics that Bulls fans are either being forced to worry about, worried about themselves, what you guys are hearing, what the national pundits are talking about who aren't close to this team or as close to this team as you guys are and covering it every single day? What is overstated or you're just flat out tired of talking about since we don't have to do the lottery marketing stuff anymore?
I've got one. I've got one I could do quick. I think Nikola Vucevic is becoming a little underrated, perhaps in his overall game, but defensively. I think, you know, we've talked about this a lot on this pod, but he's not a total sieve like I think he gets talked about sometimes. Like, he knows where to be. He's a good, you know, rim deterrent, if that makes sense, just because of his size and positioning. And the Bulls did finish. A lot of these numbers can get kind of wonky. These kind of like tell-all numbers, but they did finish, you know, in the top half of the league defensively last year. I worry more about the wing defense and like finding two-way guys they're going to be able to contribute in that respect. I think the backcourt defense will be a lot, maybe not a lot better, but there's reason to believe it could be better with Lonzo and Caruso. I think Vooch is fine on the back line in a regular season context. I get how he can get a little trickier in the playoffs when you have to be a little bit more scheme versatile. But that's one thing that I think maybe is getting a little bit overstated when we talk about the Bulls front court being a little bit thin. I don't know that Vooch defensively is the biggest cause for alarm there. I'm a little bit more worried about the forward depth and having like two-way wings that you're going to be able to put out there to stop guys defensively, but also be able to offensively contribute. I think that's more of a puzzle that the Bulls are going to struggle with than necessarily Vooch specifically. That's one that immediately comes to mind.
Although rim protection is legit. Yes. Don't you think? Yeah.
But I think, you know, deterrent wise, We got to see it play out. But I just think he gets talked about like one of the worst defensive centers in the league, and I don't think he's that.
I agree with that. I got a quick one too. Good question, Jason. I think the worry about whether or not Lonzo is like a true playmaker or a classic break you down off the dribble way overstated. Here's why: if you look at this roster construction, you've got a ton of guys who know how to just move the ball. They're not black holes offensively. He's a connecting piece to a lot of really smart, high IQ basketball players. And dare I say, I'd play Zach LaVine, you know, ascending on that spectrum, because I think his decision making, as we've all talked about, has improved immeasurably over the last little bit. I mean, obviously he's got to cut down some careless turnovers at times, but other than that, you don't, with the way this roster is being constructed, you don't need a break it down and screen roll kind of point guard. You need exactly, to me, what Lonzo Ball is, and that's a connecting piece, push ahead, throw ahead, great in transition. And then you got a lot of smart guys who know just how to play off each other, and really a lot of unselfish guys. Vucevic would be a huge example of that. Incredibly good scorer, but incredibly unselfish. Zach, career high assists last year. DeRozan's career high assists last year. So I think that's a huge overstated worry. I think the way this roster is constructed offensively, there's a lot of potential for seamless offensive basketball.
Yeah, mine is the DeRozan. I'm glad you mentioned it. The DeRozan fit. Walking the dog this morning, I was thinking about DeMar DeRozan. And, like, once you strip away the fit stuff, we're talking about a damn good basketball player, right? Like, there's a reason why he was in the $80 million range. And some people might think, you know, some teammates, our guy Tony Gill and, you know, some others that have professed their worry about not just the fit, but the money that you're going to have to pay him as he gets up in age. Man, DeMar can play. And if you look at we haven't watched Spurs basketball the way we were used to watching Spurs basketball. So they weren't in your face on TNT or ESPN, like at least once a week where you saw Tim and Manu and Tony and Pop. This last couple of years of Spurs basketball has been kind of silent, kind of, you know, not relevant enough for national consumption or out-of-town consumption. But you go back and take a look at him, and he's still one of the best isolation players in the game, efficiency-wise. And he's turned into a damn good, as you mentioned, Casey, he's turned into a damn good playmaker, especially off the screen and roll, where if you saw him coming out of USC, you know, you're like, hey, man, you know, this is a dude who's just going to put it up. His game has evolved, and he's evolved nicely in terms of filling up other places in the stat sheet, where his early years in Toronto, like, this used to be my comp for young players. Like, hey, if you're not scoring, what else are you doing? And he became the guy that did other things besides score. So I think, and let's keep it funky. He's insurance, whether it be for COVID or injury. Like, you're not going to have a time where there's not a couple of 20-point scorers out there on the court, hopefully, whether it be Zach and DeMar or Zach and Vooch or DeMar and Vooch. You got to have a couple guys out there that's able to score 8 points in a quarter for you, you know, when things are slowing down, or when you're trying to pile on and make sure you're not playing in the fourth quarter. So I know they may have overpaid for him a little bit, but, man, sometimes you pay for stuff you like, right? And they don't like missing the playoffs because a dude had COVID. You know, they don't like missing the playoffs, or they shouldn't like, I should say, missing the playoffs because you're relying on 20-year-olds to get hot in the fourth quarter, right? Like, this is transitioning, and you pointed out, Rob, in your piece, like, Kobe and Zach, and Casey has mentioned this as well, Kobe and Zach are the only people here from 2 years ago, right? So if you're going to do that, I don't want it to be other guys who ain't going to be here, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now. Like, shout out to Garrett Temple and Thad Young and all these dudes. Like, those dudes were the crust, right? But you ain't have enough filling. Like, this is the filling. This is the dude. This is the guy. There's going to be DeMar DeRozan nights where he's got 30 and Zach has 19, and Zach's going to be quite fine with that because they're going to win, right? Zach's been carrying a lot, especially these losses. When Zach scored 34 in a loss, he carrying it. People's like, oh, see, the dude who can score, but you can't win. Like, there's different reasons for this signing, I think, and there's different ways it fits, even if we're not even talking about the five on the floor. Like, DeMar DeRozan has been through some wars, right? Some playoff wars. That man has stared down, you know, LeBron James, been sent home, right? But he stared down LeBron James in Eastern Conference semis and finals before, Eastern Conference finals. So, yeah, there's somebody there who's been coached by Greg Popovich, for the last couple of years. Maybe can drop some of that wisdom on him. But just hanging out with Lulu this morning, I was like, you know what? This DeMar DeRozan thing, I don't know why I'm thinking about DeMar DeRozan while I'm walking the dog. But I'm like, yeah, DeMar DeRozan thing ain't, you know, I think it's overstated how bad a fit it is or how much money you pay for it, man. Like, I don't know about y'all, but, you know, I have to be shielded by from things that I want so bad that I'm going to pay for whatever it costs, you know? Like, I think Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Evans is like, I don't care. Bring more bottles. I want DeMar DeRozan on this team. How much you need? You need 80? All right, here's 85. We want you to feel good about yourself. Like, I'm with it. So
yeah,
that might be the thing to me that's been overstated the most headed into this training camp.
And this is something that I've harped on a lot too, Jason, but underlying in all the DeRozan fit criticisms is, it's almost like, I don't want to speak for anybody or straw man, but I think there's like sometimes an implication that like him and Zach specifically don't fit together because they're two ball dominant guys, presumably.
Right.
But Zach as a cutter and as a spot up shooter is so dynamic. And like we've talked about, the onus is so on winning this year that I think if it can all be schemed properly, like I think those two guys can be so potent alongside each other. And then right when you were talking, Jason, I was kind of envisioning like what the rotations and kind of staggering guys can look like, health provided, which is obviously not a given, but in times of this season when this entire Bulls roster is healthy, there really isn't a reason that they shouldn't have one 20 point a game score, if not two, on the court at all times. Like, yeah, there should not be second of the game when there isn't a guy like that on the court. Which it's not only that hasn't been true over the last 3-4 years, I mean, it hadn't even been close to true for the last 3 or 4 years. Like, you were really, really struggling when Zach sat to find anyone that had that type of gravity or just kind of presence offensively. The on-off splits tell the story of that. I don't have them in front of me, but you can go look them up for any season that Zach's been a Bull in terms of, like, the offensive dip. Defensively is another story, but offensively, especially last year, there's a huge dip when he sits or has been in the past. Now, you could probably mitigate that with a perimeter creator like DeRozan and Vooch and on down the line. So I like that one. I like that one too, Jason.
All right. Anything to pull out the old notebook before we wrap this puppy up? Anything you guys feel we need to touch on before we say goodbye?
Just real quick, because we covered it when it happened, when the news broke, but Tony Kukoc is obviously going in the Hall of Fame on Saturday, press conference on Friday. You know, we were able to talk to Tony from the day he got the news when he was actually over in Croatia. You know, I was fortunate to be around Tony for 3 seasons from his playing career, 96, 97, 98. I've always said wicked sense of humor that he doesn't show to a lot of people, and just badass player, man. I know we covered this last time we talked about on the pod, but there's been a few eyebrows raised about his inclusion. But
his
international career alone, before he had some injuries, and then just his role acceptance here. I mean, look, I'll end here and then you guys can riff a little bit. It's like, if you come over here reviled by Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, for whatever reason, and obviously it was mostly because of targeting Jerry Krause, and you earn those two dudes' respect,
yes, sir,
you're a baller.
I'm so glad you said that, Casey, because I see this from Bulls fans. This the initial response to Tony Kukoc making the Hall of Fame being, oh, 11-4-4 in his NBA career. Like, what does that do for
those aren't Bulls fans who understand basketball, though?
It's There's not, a difference. And they don't understand what the Hall of Fame is. It's not the NBA Hall of Fame. It's the Basketball Hall of Fame. There's, you know, there's college contingent. Tony Kukoc is going in via the international committee. So that's something that we have to take into account too. And I actually took notes on this because, Casey, if you hadn't mentioned it, I was going to rant on it for a bit. Like, you just look at his international resume before he even makes it to the NBA, and he's a 3-time champion and a 6th man of the year, 3 EuroLeague titles, 3 EuroLeague Final Four MVPs, a FIBA World Championship MVP, a EuroBasket MVP in 91.
As a child.
Five league titles across various leagues, multiple European Player of the Year awards, you know, a FIBA top 50 kind of when they did there. I think that was in the early 90s and he was named to that. Like, you could go on and on and on. I'd encourage anyone to go look up his Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame page or his Wikipedia page or whatever to get a full sense of the accolades. Like, he's an absolute sensation and an icon over there. And then came here and had a pretty distinguished NBA career. I mean, any Bulls fan who followed along through that era, like me, as to go back and watch and learn about it, like some of the, there were just so many underrated Tony Kukoc games and moments and game winners. I just think, especially in the international committee, he's so, so deserving. And I really, that perception when I see people push back against him being a deserving Hall of Fame, a Hall of Famer, you know, I get the urge to push back. So I'm glad I got to do that here. But it's ridiculous.
And NBA champion, and not just a dude riding coattails. NBA, by the way, put some more respect on his name. That's also Atlanta Hawks legend, Tony Kukoc. Don't you ever get it twisted. That dude could have easily averaged 18, 8, and 8 in a starting role in the NBA. When that dude came over, it was calling him Croatian Magic. Like 6 foot 11 and doing things that he could do. When the Bulls got him and the Celtics got Dino Raja, I was like, yes. I was like, the Bulls got the better, because it was back when getting a foreign player or a European player was like, you know, it wasn't the norm. Like 12, 15 of them wouldn't be drafted back in the days, right? Like that was a special thing. And immediately as a kid watching this, and the other thing too is, yeah, like age matters in this situation. Because if he wasn't outside in these basketball streets watching what Tony Kukoc was doing on a nightly basis, all right, back when they was all wearing the Pippins that year, like Tony Kukoc was a bad man, like a bad man. And he did it. He was one of the first athletes as a basketball player that I was like, hey, man, this dude looks like he should be working everywhere else but on a basketball court, and got it done. And got it done. Was fast enough, was athletic enough, had a crazy eye, crazy vision, terrific passer. Didn't know he could knock down shots the way he could when he first came in. And then you saw it. One of the most famous or infamous moments in Bulls history. Well, meanwhile, we're talking about Pip sitting on the bench getting screamed at by Bill Cartwright. He knocked the shot down that the play was drawn up for him to knock down. It wasn't like, oh, Phil was wrong and Pip was validated because the dude didn't hit. The dude hit the shot. Just think, coming out of a huddle, and the best player, one of the best players in the NBA, is pissed that you have the call on this shot, and you go out there and hit that shot on top of it. Like, Tony Kukoc was a lot tougher than people gave him credit for. And to this day, I respect his career, because as a Bulls fan, there wouldn't have been that vibe in that second three-peat without him. I'm sorry. I don't believe.
And two things I want to add. One, Jason, as you were just talking about his skill set, think of how the four position is played in the NBA today. And then think about the way Tony Kukoc played, the combination of passing, ball handling, outside shooting, 100%. Versatility, multi-positionality. Like, he was absolutely a harbinger for kind of how that position was going to be played in the modern NBA. So he should get his flowers for that. And also, one moment specifically, I remember when we did our Bulls Dynasty rerun series last year, when there was nothing on TV for NBC Sports Chicago. I remember watching the 98 playoff run and game 7 against the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals that year.
I was there. I covered it.
Well, then Casey, you should take the lead on this. But I remember watching him in the third quarter of that game specifically. Yes. I just had to fact check.
40
points in the third quarter of that game, carried them through the sloggiest section of that slog of a game. Like, the second
there was a lot of those too. There wasn't every one of them games wasn't masterpieces on the road to those last, especially couple championships, as you know, Casey.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said that they don't win that game 7 if not for two people, Tony Kukoc and the young goat just got it right. He had the huge third quarter offensively, and then Scottie Pippen, his defense. I mean, he was guarding everybody from
Jackson.
Yeah, Mark Jackson to Dale Davis that game. I mean, he was guarding 1 through 4, you know, sometimes 5 in that game.
So yeah.
Those two guys won game 7. I mean, obviously Michael's Michael, but Kukoc, yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing his speech on Saturday. I love the Hall of Fame. I'm a sucker for the Hall of Fame speeches. And Michael and Jerry Reinsdorf will be standing on stage with him, so that'll be a cool moment.
Rob, that was going to be my point. That you brought up is like, you can't tell the story of basketball without adding Tony Kukoc in there, just because of how transformative he was as a player. And that's a big key for me in terms of deciding who's in the Hall of Fame outside of the stats and the accolades is, does the story of basketball through the ribbons of time what's this piece? Does his legacy need to be told in that era? And it does. It certainly does, because he was one of the first, and he was excellent at it as well.
Holy shit. Did we get a Ribbons of Time from Tony Gill just now?
I love that. I love that. Jeez. I wrote that one down. That's in my thesaurus now.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can tell when a man's relationship is in a good place when flowery shit like that is coming out your mouth, boy. That is the Ribbons of Time. All right. There's nothing we should say after that. For Rob Schaefer, Casey Johnson, and the ever poetic Tony Gill. I'm Jason Goff. Thank you for listening to another Bulls Talk podcast brought to you by Coors Light. Bye.